This is The Single Wing on Phantom Island. My name is Stephen Godfrey at 38 Godfrey on most social platforms. You can also find me, I believe it's Stephen Godfrey or Stephen.Godfrey or something like that on Blue Sky. Welcome back to our first month-long maiden voyage to Phantom Island. I don't know how much we're going to lean into that title, but this is the conclusion of us doing all of the free preview, all of the sort of opening offering friends and family night buffet. I have news before we get to The Single Wing, and the news is this: phantomisland.show. phantomisland.show. That is a URL. And if you go to that URL, you can sign up and become a subscriber to Phantom Island. Again, phantomisland.show. Starting next week, starting in the month of June, episodes of Phantom Island, they're going to be free no matter what. Usually hitting around Wednesday, almost always once a week. But that second show that you normally get around Friday, so that could be The Single Wing, that could be Numbers and Words, in which I talk to a smart person, a sports quant, if you will, a quantitative. It could be Ryan's series, We're Not All Like This. It could also be interviews, other stuff we haven't really come up with yet. We reserve the right to mess with and introduce new formats into the premium content. So those shows that normally air on Friday will be for subscribers only. So if you go to phantomisland.show, you can receive everything we're talking about for $10 a month. You can also sign up for an annual subscription, which I believe you get, I think like it's $100 for an annual subscription, so you get a little discount there. There's two more tiers I want to talk about, but if you just want to subscribe, support our show, and get all the content in this feed, go to phantomisland.show, you click on that $10 subscriber tier. What if, though, you want to ask a question? What if you want to submit a question to The Single Wing? What if you would like to suggest a potential show topic for Phantom Island or one of the other programs? In order to do that, to interact with us, you can subscribe at the $15 tier, and there is an annual discount as well. So you want to ask questions, you want to interact with us, you want to kind of mess around and play with show topics, that kind of stuff, $15 subscription on the tier. Finally, there is a, let's call it a mega tier, let's call it a top tier. You know, we're still naming these things, but essentially you would become a producer of this show for $200 a month. And that would get you not only access to everything, not only the ability to submit questions, but you would also receive a monthly email from myself or Ryan talking about what's going on at Phantom Island. You would also participate in a quarterly producers meeting, which we would hold over some video service, maybe Zoom, maybe whatever's in the future, Google Meet, who knows? These things change. You would also be thanked by name, if you would like to be, every month on Phantom Island. You would also, as a producer, receive access to what else is coming, not just at Phantom Island, but at Falcon Scott Productions. And we'll talk more about that in the future. But for now, you would become a producer of Phantom Island. You'd have monthly interaction with us over email. Then obviously you'd go to the quarterly producer meetings. You could still get all the other stuff, submit a question, submit a show topic suggestion, all that kind of stuff. You would also be at essentially on the early access tier for all the future projects that we have cooking. PhantomIsland.show. But today's Single Wing on the free feed, we're finishing out the month of May as a debut, as a thank you, as a welcome. If you're new to this operation, welcome. If you're an old hat at one of the previous stops of myself and my partner in crime, Ryan Nanny, well, thanks for coming over to this fine establishment. Thanks for listening to The Single Wing. Got a lot of really nice responses from people who had never heard a Single Wing before. You're gonna get a chance today. It's gonna be half football, almost all college football, and then it's gonna be half life advice. Why? That's what y'all started asking me 3 years ago. That's it. Am I a licensed therapist? God, no. Should I be doing this? You know, that question sits in the back of the mind as I dole out advice. So, yeah, there's the legal disclaimer. Maybe go talk to a professional for whatever particular area that you're inquiring about, but I'll do my best. Hopefully I can point you in a good direction. But the football part, no disclaimer there. Just hot, juicy goss. What a terrible word when you abbreviate gossip. What a horrific way to say that, to communicate that information. As I record this, it is a lovely late spring day in May. I hope your mood fits that accordingly. We're going to do five questions, and let's see. Oh, they're all college football. Five college football questions in the classic format. And then a smattering of non-college football material. So if you're only here for the college football, well, guess what? You'll figure it out as we go. I want to thank our friends at Homefield before we go any further. We'll talk about Homefield on other future episodes. We'll talk about Homefield. Pretty much anything you listen to, we're going to talk about our friends at Homefield Apparel. So we thank them for sponsoring Phantom Island. Go check out homefieldapparel.com. Go get them new summer hats. Go get them new summer hats from Homefield. All right, let's jump into it. Right off the bat, if you're new here, I have been accused multiple times on various podcast platforms. When I talk about college football, I tend to get really excited about playing the what is called the schedule game, which really just means creating the compelling audio content of reading a future schedule out loud. I love to do this. I don't know why. I don't know if it's a tick. But our first question is requesting it, so live with it. Question number one. Also, in the future, when we have an actual subscriber platform, we will have names associated with these questions. Fancy. So I'll be able to say hello to the people who are asking the questions. Right now, purely anonymous. Could be a bot. Doesn't sound like AI generated, though. None of these are. Very, very humanistic. All right. Looking at Georgia Tech's schedule and are they a potential playoff team? Question mark. Clemson and Georgia are the hardest games on that schedule, and assuming they and Tech win out, could a 10-2 Tech team make the playoffs? I think that they and Tech, that would be Clemson? Are they talking about the ACC? I don't know. I don't know who they are. Where they is in this sentence, but fair warning when you submit questions to the Single Wing. I know they're being done somewhat like hastily off of social media. You're clicking a link. You're kind of typing something in with your thumbs. I will judge your grammar a little bit and your syntax a lot. But if it makes you feel better, I have people very close to me in my life who I also say, hey, edit me. And they are ruthless. Let's play this game because it sounds fun and it sounds insane to say. And that's good enough for May, folks. That's good enough for May. The Georgia Tech 2025 football schedule. What I love about this is not the Georgia Tech part of it. I love that no matter how much this sport changes, the undulations, the seismic, catastrophic, plate tectonic level disruption of the ground on which we stand in college football. I've been doing this like two decades, basically, and every year someone wants to put in blood red ink a double digit win team from the Atlantic Coast Conference. I love this so much. You might be new here, you might be new to the show, you might be new to the zeitgeist of college football. Don't do that. The ACC will punish you accordingly. But you know what? We're liking Georgia Tech. We're feeling Georgia Tech. Let's do it. Starting the season off on a Friday night. I'm actually excited about this game because why not? At Colorado. Okay. On a Friday night, week one. Gardner Webb. The Clemson game is very soon thereafter. We're talking September 13th. I'm curious, although no, because if they beat Colorado just by virtue of the exposure, they'll probably be a top 25 team if they're not already. Or I don't know what they are right now. I'm not paying attention to any nonsense preseason anything. That could be a top 25 game. That could be a moment. It's early. It feels early. For the sake of this question, you know, it feels anticlimactic. Home for Temple at Wake by week. Home for Virginia Tech at Duke. Cuse at home at North Carolina State. Another bye at BC. Home for Pitt, and then, of course, this year we get the Georgia Bulldogs in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, so before we even talk about anything related to Georgia Tech, let's play Find the ACC team that looks fair to Midland now that is absolutely going to shiv you with like a Bowie knife. I don't think you can shiv somebody with a Bowie knife, but oof. 10-2, assuming the losses to the question asker was assuming losses to Clemson at Bobby Dodd early in the season, and then maybe they lose to Georgia in the bins. So you are completely, you're assuming a clean slate otherwise in conference play, and then the non-con, she has, okay, that's fine. I like them against Colorado right now. We're just gonna ignore Duke. We're going to ignore Duke at our own peril. We're going to ignore an annoying Boston College game coming off of a bye where you might be a little dinged up and in overlook mode. You're going to ignore the frustrating bag of hammers that is Pat Narduzzi coming in week before Thanksgiving. Feels like one of those is like an absolute, yes, recipe for an upset. Thing is, though, 9 could still do it. I don't know if that 9 could. You want to shuffle this around and say they get upset. Maybe they lose 2 games in a row, Virginia Tech and Duke. And then they lose to Georgia. Maybe they've got a Clemson win and they go to the ACC championship. I'm just spitballing because I just gave them 2 conference losses. That's a decent-ish resume. How punitive will the committee be after the SMU performance? Don't act like these things aren't going to be held as grudges, mainly because the SEC and the Big Ten are screaming at the committee, whom they basically control, to do exactly that, to hold a grudge. All right, I've been glib, but I just want to go ahead and say that, like, mid-March, I was pulling together the Athlon stuff, and, like, gotta like a lot of this. It's pretty nice. Coordinators, Faulkner, head coach next year, okay? Gideon, I think, is a really good hire. It's an O-lineman culture team because Brent Key is the most O-lineman who ever O-lined. And they're deep at quarterback. They're deep at running back. So all the sort of eye-rolling and tropey stuff about ACC play, man, like, they could sneak up and be the most physical team in the league. It's like a smarter Pitt. It's going to hurt somebody's feelings. Although Pitt's offense was, I think, pretty well received last year. They're not as big and dumb as they used to be. I like this team a lot. Penciling them for 10 feels incredibly foreign and silly. But it's always going to feel that way until it happens in reality, and then it doesn't feel as absurd anymore. 7-6 is, that's a lot. A 3-win variance, I think, is a lot because I don't know if they have depth that way. We're going to talk about another ACC team in a second, and the depth they assembled is the reason they went to the playoff last year. I really like this team. I really like what they're doing. I really like that they turn the bridge coach into the identity guy, but they didn't really, this wasn't genius 40 chess or anything. They grabbed Brent Key because they needed a cost-effective solution when they didn't get Willie Fritz and things fell apart there. There's so much other work that needed to be done at the time. And if you're a veteran listener, I've relayed this story more than once. Bill O'Brien was sort of being pushed, not sort of, was being pushed on them aggressively. And then Fritz was the one they wanted. The timing didn't really work out with what was going on in the, but I also think that's somewhat overblown because I think had Fritz really felt comfortable with the prospect, I think he would have walked out on Tulane. I know that's a mean thing to say, but you're talking about a 10, one decision, the decision to stay at Tulane, that's a 10-day decision because you're going to end up somewhere else. But I think if he really thought Georgia Tech was the right spot to go, I think he would have left. I think it was a little bit bungled, but look, Key is doing this in a very unsexy way, but they are more competent than they have been in years, obviously past Collins. And now I think really moving into that Johnson era, he's not there yet. I mean, we're still talking about a 7-win coach, but every single thing they've done within the constraints of Georgia Tech, they've done correctly without trying to be something they're not, which is the difference between Key and the Collins era, you know, kind of PR machine and all the hullabaloo. Didn't think I'd get hullabaloo in today. Question two. This is my favorite question that I pulled out of the entire sheet. And I've already thrown this at Ryan in the pre-production phase. And we just kind of, we don't have an answer for this one. It's going to be good. Are there more coaches who would be successful at Ohio State or at Kent State, accounting for the obvious discrepancy in how each place defines success? There's a million ways to approach this question. And I think what you want is, are you, if you're a successful coach by some measure, is it capital S successful if you win with the very, very best players? Or if you, and when I say win, at Ohio State, the standard isn't, you know, a national title or, you know, playoff run, Big Ten title for sure. Or is it more success? Is the value of success considered greater if you can get Kent State to 4 or 5 wins with the dregs and bottom of the barrel and you're out there, you are playing 4D chess. You know, you are trying to out-scheme opponents. You are trying to do the strangest, most creative things possible. Remember when Sean Lewis had that hot 5 minutes against Georgia? It was like a 5 minutes. It was like a first quarter, I think. I don't think there's an answer to this. I think they're entirely different skill sets. The problem is we're all feeding coaches in the same direction, meaning there's no coaching archetype. There's no coach that I know of who wants to stay at that Kent State level forever. And because college football, it bottlenecks at the very top of the sport, and we don't have a way in which a, you know, ruddy workman-like wild card team goes on to win a national championship, like that just doesn't happen. It's only the elites. Then we are either directly or indirectly routing or encouraging all of our coaching talent to pursue the Ohio State path, which is be the best with the best when there's no margin for error, when it's entirely professionalized and you are essentially a faux NFL coach. That's what we're saying. Until you can have like a Kansas State national championship, that's what we're saying, right? I have noticed something throughout my career that a wildly successful coach or coordinator at a helmet school will usually point to, if you ask him, like, who's the best coach you've ever met? Suddenly coach is defined as someone who is innovative beyond expectation and resourceful beyond expectation. And those behaviors usually occur at lower levels of the sport. So what I'm saying is if you go and ask a coordinator at Ohio State, Georgia, Miami, Michigan, whatever, that question, they're going to tell you about some guy they knew at a lower level of football who might still be there, who might still be the head coach. So what does that tell you about our valuation? Seems like you got to go in and play the game and figure out how to run the very, 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 very best running backs room in the country with all of the political dynamic and all of the more money, more problems, headaches that you would get at an Ohio State, for instance, in this question, than to be the guy who understands schematically and the guy who understands core tenets of development, like the ability to over-index and turn 2s to 3s or 3s to 4s.
Because that's what you would have to do at Penn State. You'd have to turn zeros to ones. And then you would have to scheme it out enough to maybe snag a headline win and then pick off conference opponents. But I've said this a lot over the years, and people don't want to hear it. I mean, you gotta grade this shit on a curve. There are 5-win seasons out there that are absolutely more impressive to me than 11-1 conference champions. For sure. Absolutely. But what we've also seen is a lot of the architects of those 5-7 miracle runs, for whatever reason, they aren't the guy. They aren't supposed to be the guy at a premier program. Look, this is a Dan Mullen conversation. Dan Mullen is not meant to be the head coach at Florida. Dan Mullen is not meant to be the head coach at Michigan. I think Dan Mullen is the greatest head coach in Mississippi State history. And I think when Dan Mullen finishes off either 1 or 2 years maximum at UNLV, he will be the I think his second act now, provided he can find someone to handle the new personnel landscape. I think someone needs to go and get him in the Power 2, probably in the Big 10 this time, and then he would do. I'm going to make a bold claim here, and it's nothing against anything that's going on at Illinois, because they've done nothing wrong. They've done everything right. And I was wrong about the AD hire, and I was wrong about hiring Bielema. Go all the way back to, I think that was a split zone duo era, you know, a criticism of, oh man, they got an ex football player in at AD, and he goes and gets Bielema, and they could have gone dynamic. And instead, they're doing a retread, but it was a retread with someone who I think had undergone a pretty tremendous amount of, what's the word I'm looking for? I think he refined some of his craft in the time he was in the NFL. I also think that Arkansas wasn't the ideal fit. I do think he got better as a program manager. But Dan Mullen at Illinois would be better, in my opinion. So what is that Illinois program that's not Illinois right now in the Big Ten? Is it about to be Wisconsin if things don't work out with Luke Fickell? Crazy to say. I don't know. But I'm never going to hire Dan Mullen at Michigan. I'm never going to hire Dan Mullen at Alabama. I'm never going to hire him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? That's where I'm at. I bet Dan Mullen would be a house of fire at UCLA or Purdue. Just a thought. All right. Question number 3. How long does Rhett Lashley stay at Southern Methodist University? After he brought the Mustangs to the playoffs, you'd imagine that he'd be on the radar if it's an active SEC carousel. Does SMU have the cachet and resources to keep him? Okay, well, SMU went to the playoff. They did so because specifically under Lashley's program management, this roster built itself correctly. This roster has a really effective offense and still went out and went through Texas and competed and won and raised NIL funding and got good on defense in the right places. Good enough to make the playoff before anybody wants to get mad at me. Okay? Good enough. ACC championship notwithstanding, and the first round of the playoff notwithstanding. Are they elite? No. That's why they lost those games. Were they in the American a couple years ago? Yeah, dude. Yeah, like, they're building really well, really quickly. Sure, I can. Rhett Lashley's going to get a look from multiple Auburn-shaped and Arkansas-shaped schools. If you didn't know, he was quarterback at Arkansas. He's from Springdale. There's obvious connection there. I don't think it's just because he's the native son. He was, I'm looking at his CV. Yeah. So he has Auburn, obviously. He was a play caller. That's right. I definitely think he's going to get a look at one of those two schools if one of those two schools has an opening. But I also think he would get looks in other places and might prefer to do that in a place where he doesn't necessarily have history. However, this is not the conversation we had last cycle about Well, John Sommerall's in a really good place for now. He can bide his time. Dude, Rhett Lashley was in the playoff. Went to the ACC championship game. Big difference. Doesn't have to play the G5 lottery every year. Build the best G5, the one single best roster. Survive, injury luck, scheduling luck, everything else. And then, you know, that's Boise. Boise has refined that process down to where it's less luck, but it's still luck. And there are some breaks in the G5 season last year where Boise doesn't make it. Rhett Lashley doesn't have to deal with that. He can go out and try and win the ACC every year and go to the playoff. So there's a lot to be said for that. Would it change if Arkansas tried to drop just a bank on him? I think, look, close your eyes and picture SMU. These are people who aren't afraid of spending a dollar, okay? I'm not saying he's locked for life. I'm saying that if he could stay there and lean on them, they're sitting in the heart of Dallas. Yeah, I don't think we've seen the ceiling at SMU. And I'm not basing this off of one season in the ACC, but in terms of strange bedfellow conference realignment, this looks really smart for them. Really smart. All right, next question. I'm curious why you think the SEC would go after Tobacco Road schools before Florida State or Clemson. When the big money coming in is TV based, why wouldn't the SEC grab the two biggest eyeball grabbers from the ACC first? Florida State alone would rank in the top five of viewership in the SEC over the last few years, which is crazy given the up and down output. Thanks. It doesn't work that way. And also, I think you're probably a Florida State fan asking this because you did not stop to consider that Clemson is actually a ratings albatross. It is not fair to say this. I just recorded a Phantom Island with Ryan about why charting health of something solely on television ratings and sports is a bad idea and we should stop paying attention to it. But if you could give a sodium pentothal, true serum, to any ESPN executive, they would tell you how absolutely down in the shits they were about having multiple Alabama Clemson national championship and playoff semifinal games. Clemson is a small place relative to the legacy brands in college sports. Also, you need to look at the market and what you own. The following logic does not necessarily assume that if you have a school in Florida, you have Florida, or a school in Texas, you have Texas. For instance, the previously mentioned SMU Mustangs are not going to deliver the same television ratings as the Texas Longhorns or the Aggies. But the SEC feels really, really good about its TV market presence in Florida now. Florida State can add to that. Tobacco Road can open something. There is also still a desire to spread the map logically, which is what the SEC has done with every expansion. And you would not be expanding the map. There's no manifest destiny there. You already have South Carolina. You already have the state of Florida. I'm not saying South Carolina is a better program than Clemson or Florida and Florida State. I'm just telling you how these people think. If you have Georgia, Florida, and Alabama in your conference already, you know, the Jacksonville, Pensacola, Tampa, Orlando TV markets, did I leave a city out up there? I don't know. Valdosta, Montgomery. You feel pretty good about those markets right now. To go into Carolina would be massive. The thing that you're not asking about is that the also previously mentioned Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, they have Big Ten written all over them. If this thing really gets down to a war of superpowers and we really start pulling entities off of the playing surface and we're down to red versus blue, if you will, and you want to make a strike against a territory, that hasn't really happened. We didn't know it was going to be a two-nation war until this last cycle, because there were, look, believe it or not, once upon a time, the Big 12 was, wildly healthy, and the Pac-12 had a really optimistic future. But now that we've kind of cleared the board between its it's that Northern Conference and that Southern Conference, and they're the dominant entities, and everything else is a step below or a leap, or a uncontrolled tumbling down a staircase. No one has struck into the other's territory yet. I don't think the SEC would do it, but I think Carolina makes the most sense logically, and then Virginia, either Tech or UVA, but I think maybe UVA. Right now, the school that makes the most sense for both of the superpowers is North Carolina, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Good thing they're stable and everything's fine. Right now, that makes the most sense. That's a public school with strong academic standards and a massive sidewalk appeal, a really strong alumni base. I don't need to do this brochure bullshit, but they are the piece on the board right now. It's not Florida State. It's not Clemson. It's not Georgia Tech. Now, if the Big Ten is smart, they flood the lane on North Carolina, and then I think they go after Georgia Tech, because then you have a foothold in Atlanta, less for, please don't send me messages, I'm from the state, okay? I can rank my top 10 Waffle Houses in the state, so please don't start with this shit on, you don't know what you're talking about. I understand Georgia Tech is a fraction of the fan base in terms of sidewalk appeal as UGA. So I'm not saying it's like, oh, well, we're going to split the state now. No, it's not that, my guy. Do you know how many Ohio State fans are in the Atlanta area? Do you know how many Michigan fans are in the Atlanta area? And so on and so forth. There's a Steelers bar in every corner of every city of this nation. Having Tech activates. It's the exact same play as Los Angeles. I shouldn't have to explain this. It's kind of why, like, I know it's in the news right now, but Notre Dame and USC makes more sense on a map than you would think. So that would be the play. I'm sorry, but I just don't believe that Florida State fits the Big Ten. And then I do think they're on a little bit of an island. I'm not saying they're unattainable ever. Like, if we're drawing this thing down to eventually it's like 25 versus 25, like, yeah, you're going to get a bid. But no, I don't think you are the most valuable piece on the board right now is North Carolina, by far. By far. And I believe I talked on the last single wing about people's questions regarding the stability of the league overall with the Clemson-Notre Dame contract. Believe me, Clemson knows they need to fortify. They need to look as good as possible. Clemson's going to be really, really aggressive, I think, moving forward in the neutral site kickoff and neutral site, I don't know what you call it, just neutral site games. Because I do think they anticipate future instability in the ACC, as they should. And with only 1 year's worth of data on a playoff that's going to be changing immediately, we're going to reseed it for sure. As of this recording, we're going to be receding the playoff, and then also we might be expanding it. We might be handing the power to 8 automatic bids. Clemson is mindful right now. I think they're doing good work to lock in the strongest resume possible that they can control. Does that mean if you're a Clemson fan, you got to start cheering for South Carolina? I think, yeah. I mean, you, actually. You don't want a 4-win South Carolina every year. You don't. I'm not saying you want to lose to Lenora Sellers either, but I'm just saying you want to have bullet points on the resume. This is how it works now. Sorry. How would you fix this, by the way, if you were Florida State? Some of this stuff it's out of your control. But I would encourage Florida State to comport itself the same way. I don't really think this has anything to do with the classic money issues that have gone on. I really don't. I think that this is just about geography. I think it's a little bit about their reputation, but it's kind of hard to argue with. Like, I can't tell Florida State they're doing something wrong. Like, they're opening the season against Bama. They understand the stakes here as well. They obviously hold their permanent rivalry with Florida. And I think that if there was some sort of poaching or implosion or something like that, I think they in Miami would be able to work out something. I mean, shit, go back. Look, Florida State's been independent. You know? Do it. By the way, they're at Bama again in 26. They're doing it right. They are controlling what they can. And outside of, you know, the insanity that they had last season and all that, like, it's all you can ask for. I think what we're kind of talking around right now, though, before I move on, is a good evidence as to why you wouldn't want VC in here just circling like a hawk, because VC's interested in returning the investment or trimming you down and selling you. They're not interested in national titles. So if it didn't make financial sense, or one day it might not make financial sense to do, to schedule, for instance, something that would look better on a playoff resume, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. All right. Next question. Even given your prior disclaimers about being a limited advisor on College Football 25, do you have any thoughts on what major updates should we expect to EACFB 26 from 25? I just texted Ben at EA when I got this question, and I said the following. We're just going to turn this into an internet rumor. Hey, got single wing questions about what to expect from the game. I'm telling them there's a story mode and it's 60 hours. Sorry in advance. That's it. He said, sure. Confirmed. 60-hour story mode in the new EACFB 26. I don't know. I helped on the relaunch. I talked to Ben as a friend, and that's it. And Ben's a longtime listener, and we thank him for his listenings and his codes. And the fact that EA's FC has now infected my children with hot takes and temporary soccer alignments. I don't know how I feel about a child picking a real world team affiliation based solely off of a video game, like a choice he made in a video game to screw with his big brother. I can't tell if that's amazing or if that's behavior not to encourage for the future. I'm not sure. He just really likes Man City, but he hasn't really provided an analysis as to why. I think he's just doing it to be a dick to his brother. But I mean, if you have sons, you understand that that's pretty common behavior. I don't know what's coming on College Football 26. I am nearing a point where I'll probably dust it off, 25 off again. In that sort of anticipation build, and those who play the game understand this. And I was getting to a point I liked with Kansas State, and so I'll get back and kind of mess with them. But I will be I will be receiving 26 fresh. I have not worked on the game this year or done anything other than, you know, just check in with that team and those people, and I'm happy they're doing it. I'm happy it's back. I think year over year, it's a build. And Ben came on Split Zone Duo when I was there. And, you know, I would really, really like having been in the Zoom room, at least for parts of the development. I can't overemphasize that it's like turning a cruise ship when you're on a yearly deadline. Like, change doesn't implement near as fast as you think, even in the world of DLC and, you know, pushing system updates or build updates or whatever. Like the game's got to go gold, which means it has to be sort of done and certified at a certain point well before street date. And then you're turning around, you're fixing bugs, you're kind of watching the initial reception to the new modes and changes. And then, like, you're tweaking and updating the current year that just came out, hoping it's a financial success because that justifies you, and then turning around and doing it for, you know, CFB 27. And so, not to mention the fundamentals of the sport that they are emulating in a video game changing every fucking second. And so it's not as, I'm partial because I've known Ben for so long, like, working on a college football game is infinitely harder than working on an NFL game for obvious reasons. And then past that, like, people get mad about the physics and stuff like that. I'm not a good enough player to know. I probably never will be, given the limited amount of free time I have in my life. But also, like, when I play it, it feels fun. It feels responsive. It still feels more possible than Madden to me. And I think that's, you know, if you're a competitive gamer and, like, you are putting in 1,000 hours a year, you probably do, you know, you can probably tell me what's wonky and the physics are off here and this, and I, you know, this play's broken because it's unbeatable. But because I'm filthy casual, as the gamers say, the biggest thing I actually look for, aside from, like, oh shit, the stadium's doing this, or oh shit, like, oh my God, they got this thing at Georgia Southern that I love so much, and, like, when I get into it and I'm bouncing teams around, aside from, like, aesthetics, it's that feeling of actual brokenness that college football should hand you. There should be plays that are wonky and borderline impossible in Madden that you can pull off and feel distinct with as you go team to team in college. This is my opinion. This is not the mission statement for EA. But I think they did a good job of that, because when I play Madden, it's much more rigid. Also, my kids have been kicking the fucking shit out of me in Madden. Like, putting on, like, they, like, my eldest puts the Eagles on and just beats my ass like a fucking mule, and it's got to stop, and I don't have time to get better. I need to watch those Kurt Bankert videos. Do you remember Kurt Bankert? He was a backup. I think he played at Virginia. He was, like, a career journeyman quarterback for, like, the Packers and the Falcons and maybe the Niners. I don't remember. But, like, he does, like, basically how-tos on, like, short-form media. I don't know. Like, Jesus. I kind of just want to pay someone to, like, ghost it, spoof it, like Elon did, just so I can kick the shit out of my 10-year-old. It's not good. It's a little fucking disconcerting. This is why I keep a PS3 for other reasons, because I'll put on Blitz 01 and make him see Jesus. I still got it in some ways. They're, by the way, they're disrespect of original Tecmo Bowl. I don't know what I'm doing as a parent. I don't know why I'm giving parenting advice. Next question. I'm diving into a field, and then in parentheses this person puts, going to grad school for math. I know, gross. It's not gross. Where the outlook on finding a job is becoming hard/not looking great. How do I stay confident/approach this in terms of mindset? ? It can feel unsettling to know what I want to do has, quote, a bad outlook. I want to ask a really dumb liberal arts driven question. What math job is not going well right now? I thought you nerds were always employable. That was the whole point of this thing. It can't be as bad as, like, oh, I'm a marketing journalism co-major with an emphasis on print. Like, by the way, my technical degree is print journalism with an emphasis in magazine writing and a minor in English. Good job, dummy. I'm just curious what math degree doesn't have an applicable field in our current economy. Am I just not thinking of something? There's no math Latin. There's no math classics. There's no math gender studies. I'm just literally going down a list of things that my still living father complains about. Yeah, I'm really curious about this. You're going to have to reach back out and tell me what kind of math you're going into that doesn't look great. All right, now let's answer your question. How do I stay confident and approach this in terms of a mindset? It can feel unsettling to know that what I want to do has a bad outlook. You're going to grad school. You probably aren't crazy old, in meaning that, like, you have a significant portion of your life in front of you, and this is where I'm going. You don't really know where you're going to end up. Your anxiety here is rooted in a certainty that is unearned. One of the greatest minds I've ever worked with in journalism is Brian Floyd, who is a real person. If you listen to Shutdown Fullcast, I know they have a bit about Floyd being silent, but Floyd was, his title was, I think, managing editor in the halcyon days of SB Nation, when all that talent was coming through. And he was really, I mean, he was definitely a co-architect of it and of building the talent. Floyd has an MIT degree, I believe, management information technology. He's a math degree from Washington State. There's no fucking way that Floyd thought, like, he'd be doing this. He's still in the industry, by the way. Like, some of the best minds in media have backgrounds that don't even come close to J school. Don't waste your time and do that. So this is a very personal anecdote, but like, you don't know. My wife went to school for journalism almost as a default, and I really do, like, my wife's way more diligent and responsible than I am. She really kind of felt like as she navigated liberal arts that, like, she didn't find a home in time, and it was more about a degree completion, which, by the way, that's a ton of people I know. And my wife is an ace in nonprofit development. It's what she does. I don't know how many J-school classes prepared her for that. I don't know how many J-school classes prepared me for anything. But I am still struggling, and I really hope I'm not being naive or just overlooking something, that going to grad school for anything in math wouldn't be considered an asset in a much broader sense. I think you need to expand your palette. Now, it says what I want to do has a bad outlook. Now, maybe you have a really, really, really narrow really, really defined career in mind or job in mind. But look, man, I'm gonna probably advise you against that. You don't know. It's incredibly rare that we shape our own job. That's kind of a false pretense. I think it's bad salesmanship on a part of the American dream. I think you can get to the field. I think you can have, look, there are people with singular passions out there. But I do think that we got into a weird point at the dawn of the millennium of, like, it was kind of like that trophy ribbon participation culture thing where it's like, no, you can do this. You can do exactly whatever it is you put your heart to. And I'm like, yes, that mantra has to stay because I do think it's inherent in who we are as a culture, but not at the expense of limiting your options or not at the expense of diversifying your interests. You might not have a passion for the same thing in 5 years or 20. So I don't know where I picked this up, but I've heard it multiple times where essentially, like, the job you think of as the most boring thing in the world at 20 is probably, whatever that job is, probably a more lucrative, more secure, and more promising career in terms of, like, security and finance when you're 40. Meaning, like, I know there are tax attorneys listening to this right now, and they probably didn't dream of that at 15, but you're going to be good, man. You know, corporate accountant, you're going to be okay. And not every outlook, not every endeavor. I'm a person who defines himself by the work he does, and that is not healthy. You are not your fucking job. I said the man in his mid-40s quoting Fight Club, but you're not. So you can have a vocation that is maybe a step off of what you're wanting to do that can hopefully still allow you to do the things that you want to outside of that. So I'm bouncing around a little bit on this one, but I feel like based off of your phrasing that you are maybe a little too narrow in your approach. And I am fascinated to know what kind of math is better than less math on a person's CV. Next question. Simple and to the point, but it was submitted twice, so I think the person needs to hear it, or person's asking a lot. How do you get over a girl? You've provided no context, no history. I don't know the details. I don't know if you did it, if she did it. I have a pretty good idea that she did it. I don't know where you are in your life. I don't know if you're cohabitating still. So there's a lot I don't know here. So we're going to speak really generic. You're going to go through that kind of like mini cycle, the stages of grief. Okay. So that'll happen. First piece of advice is to allow yourself a window of wallowing. Okay. I'm going to reference all of this back to the last time I had a bad breakup, which would have been 2000. You know what? Let's not worry about the date. I was suddenly single. I had just moved to Nashville. This had happened just pretty soon after I moved to Nashville. I had a job. Let's not call it a career. I had a job. And I had a roommate at the time who's one of my best friends. And he was watching me kind of walk around. You know when you incur some sort of small like dad type injury, hammer on the finger or something, and you're like, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. No, I'm fine, I'm fine. And you like try and walk it off. I did that for a month. Reader, I was not fine. I lost 7 pounds, and not in a fun or healthy way. This is probably the least fun way to lose weight. I was a wreck, but I was like containing the wreck. So I would say wallow. Like, get in there and feel bad. Get in there and feel the fucking feeling. That's the first thing I'm going to tell you. But I said window, and we're going to put some walls around this, okay? We're not going to do this forever. Also, within the window of wallowing, that's wallowing in a selfish way. I also assume you don't have any dependents or, like, children or anything, or, like, you know, you're not currently piloting a plane. Within the window of wallowing, walls of wallowing, within that space, you're going to keep this to yourself, essentially. You're going to talk to your friends. You're going to talk to your family. You're not going to talk to her. We're not going to get on social media. Unless it's to find a friend who wants to meet up to go see a movie or something. Okay? So nothing is acceptable in this period of time that involves any interaction, observance, lurking, stalking, none of it. Zero. Okay? But you can feel bad for yourself for like a month. Eat what you want. Do what you want. Feel bad for yourself. Okay. And now you can pause this and come back in 30 days. You ready? Okay. And it's been 30 days. All right, cool. Now it's time to focus on yourself. Now it's time to basically audit things that are realistic, that can be changed, that you feel like will benefit yourself. What can you work on about you that can benefit you? This is not some sort of wellness influencing bullshit at all. You don't have to start going to the gym if you didn't before, or vice versa, or whatever. I'm not telling you to run a marathon. I'm not telling you to cut your hair. We're not going to do anything tropey. Okay? What fundamental parts of communication and self-respect can we work on? What habits can we build? And how can we stack those minor successes over time? This is about 90 days. Okay. By the way, I'm not pulling these numbers out of thin air. I'm going off of my last deal. Within those 90 days, you can go out and date if you want. You can go out and, you know, I don't want to say attempt that experience again of having a girlfriend. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and say don't do that, because this 90 days really needs to be about yourself. What I did after I was completely gutted, ruined after this bad breakup was, well, at first I was like, oh, I'm never going to do it, blah, 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 again, right, of course. Then you have the period of, like, the wallowing after I finally let myself feel the thing. And then when I kind of got back out there, I was, by no means was I a perfect human or man, but I was 110% communicative the entire time that I was not interested in anything serious, set it at jump. And this isn't in sort of a sleazy, casual encounter way. It was that, like, every... God, dude, I don't know. I was in my 20s. I had so much fucking free time. I couldn't imagine now. Good Lord. Talking about being busy in your 20s. I would slap y'all. All that time I had, I chose to do things that weren't the 50-50 component of a relationship or the investment of a relationship. It was, hey, look, let me give you an example. I had one friend who was coming out of rehab. Spending a lot of time with that friend was just, that was it. This is going to bridge us over into acts of service in a second, which is a trope of the single wing. But we're not there yet. We're still focusing on ourselves. I'm just going to go out with friends. I'm going to go home and be fine with it. And then the next day, instead of waking up in that space where the relationship would be, I'm going to go do something for myself. And it can be whatever. People do retail therapy. I would guard against it. People become exercise freaks. I would guard against it. I would definitely encourage you to go out and treat your body well to whatever degree you define that to be, or a medical professional. But you don't have to don't replace the relationship. That's not what I'm telling you to do. In this space, this 90 days of self-focus, build habits, small habits. I do really advise, probably the tropiest thing, like the most cliche thing I can say is like, take something up. For me, it was, I just read a lot, which is not something I didn't do beforehand, but it was something I was doing dramatically less of, because this person that I was so damn convinced I was in love with, it was like, oh, I'm never moving on. Want a lot of reading going on. You can tell, by the way, that I'm not too torn up about this at all. Considered to be a massive blessing in hindsight. Of course, I didn't at the time, though. So I'm in this 90 days. I just started reading. Funnily enough, I got back into comics. That was one thing where I was traveling a lot. I was at TNA, and I wanted to do something casual. I wanted to do something that felt self-centered. And I was like, oh, I used to collect comics when I was a kid. And I started reading like graphic novels, because this is a period of time, and I might be mushing dates together, where the concept of the phrase graphic novel starts coming back into the zeitgeist. And so it was like I started swimming, like going to a proper Olympic-sized pool and swimming. And I started just like bumming around this place called The Great Escape here in Nashville. So I was like buying records and buying graphic novels and started reading like Alan Moore and Frank Miller and stuff that I didn't do when I was 12. I didn't do a ton of it, but I just did. I was like, oh, this is nice. I have this time. I fill it with something, right? Then we're going to go to acts of service. And this is the one thing I regret not doing a hell of a lot more of. When I went through the grief of losing a family member years later, acts of service was like, it doesn't provide the dopamine instantly. Nothing does when you're in a grief cycle. But looking back, it was, oh man, it is the absolute best at reinforcing the concept of the human condition and getting you out of your mind, like getting you out of this sort of self-focused grief state. So act of service was a big one. I wish now in hindsight I had done more of that. I threw myself into work at the time because I was traveling so much internationally with the TNA stuff. If this is your first single wing, the only years of my professional career that weren't in journalism, I spent as a fixer, I guess, in a professional wrestling company. It's a very long story. So after that 90 days, then you get into the acts of service. I have one of my fondest memories of living in grief was after we lost a family member, the first Christmas after a sudden loss of a young family member. We all went to, on Christmas Eve, at the time where everyone, like the ramp up, kind of starts at like 4:30, you know, goes till like 10 o'clock, put the kids down or whatever. We didn't have kids yet. That was a big part of this. Our children weren't born yet when this happened. We were married, but the children weren't born yet. We went to the biggest soup kitchen here in town. And I, because of my restaurant experience, immediately volunteered to work in the back in the kitchen, because it felt good to get into that like rhythmic mechanic. Oh man. I spent a summer in a restaurant, my first restaurant job, where I was either a host, like, hey, welcome, and I would seat you at the table, and then I would work, coordinate with the wait staff, and then I would bus. And then if I didn't do that one day, like in a tie, like in dress clothes, I would be in the back washing dishes, completely different. Would show up in like jeans you could burn if you needed to, or shoes you could throw away after your shift, which I often did. So I know how to work a Hobart. If you know what a Hobart is, there you go. And I would, so that Christmas Eve, like for different members of our family, it was like important that they were like talking to the people coming in for the meal, or maybe, you know, helping talk to the staff or talk to, I can't remember who ran that particular kitchen. I want to say it was maybe through Catholic Charities, but I don't think that's right. I think it was non-denominational. It doesn't matter. For me, I didn't want to talk to anybody, but I wanted to get some work done. And I really thrived on the idea of like all these people are here for whatever reason to hand out the to walk the food out. So like you, there were people serving the food on Christmas. It wasn't like you even went through cafeteria style. The folks would come in, they'd bring them in off the street, or they'd bring them in on a bus or a local shuttle or whatever. They'd have them sit down, and then we would essentially like wait on, like they would have a restaurant style experience. And so people are running around, they're getting food, you know, you're trying to check for allergies and getting people other things they need, maybe a blanket or whatever. And then me helping like just get all of the kitchen in order. God, that was so satisfying. It just, and we were there until like 10:30 that night. And that's how you process grief. Different kind of grief to go to this, but I really promise you can't go wrong with acts of service. It's a condition of the brain that makes me believe in intelligent design. So, and I'm like, please God, don't send me a mention on that. Well, it's actually this chemical. Just shut up. It makes me believe in intelligent design. It makes me believe in a creator. So now we're 90 days plus 30 days, the 30 days of wallowing, 90 days of self-focus. Start doing acts of service. You can blend that into the 90. And then my story ends where I hope your story does, maybe, was it wasn't that specific time frame, but in a range of about 7 months later, I was what I now describe as the most single I ever was. And that's not a negative thing. I was really, really, like really content with things. I was working a lot, but I had all these interests. Things felt balanced. I didn't care about the future in the sense of like, I should be in a relationship or this should be happening right now. It was the first time post-collegiate where I was like, oh no, like I'm not measuring myself by the presence or absence of a significant other. And I felt really, for a while, they're really like, oh, like I'm starting to define myself as a person. Still didn't go to therapy, but that's also because I didn't have enough money. And then I met my wife. And to say I wasn't trying at all to meet someone at that level would underserve it. But it would also mean that, like, when we met, I was basically just trying to be like, oh, I'm going to definitely try and hook up with her. And that was the extent of the interest. I hope that helps. Next question. Are you going to see Superman in theaters when it comes out? We're not talking about the no-hitter right now. Okay? We're not talking about the no-hitter. What are we, 6 innings in right now? Don't ask me about the no-no. Do you need to go bother your pitcher in the middle of this? Just shut up. Don't ask me. You've seen the trailers. We're feeling great. We're feeling good about the whole universe. We're feeling good about the reboot. We're feeling good about the casting. The tone, the score. Don't ask me about the no-hitter. God. One of the things, unfortunately, that I haven't been able to do in months is go to the movies. I have a watch list right now that is pretty ridiculous. And just the other day, I was going to reverse engineer it by like what's going to go out of theaters first. I'm a big go see it in the theater person, which is hilarious considering my phase of life. Just total fool's errand. But I'm trying to pull up my watch list. Like, so the film Warfare was like, there was like one theater in the city showing it one time a day. And I really wanted to go see that. And then now it's out. So right now in theaters, it was Warfare I wanted to go see. Sinners, which has been just like 1.5 thousand people have recommended it. Look, I'm going to go ahead and put this on front. Dude, an accountant sequel? Yes, I hope they make 10 of those. That's Dad Fast and Furious, okay? I have not seen Thunderbolts yet. I have not seen... What else is out right now in the movie theaters? I want to go. Oh, well, I mean, by the time you guys hear this, Mission Impossible. Here is where I know I'm going to the movies. And it should have happened by the time you hear this. Lilo and Stitch, opening weekend. I have a Letterboxd. And I think people who see it think I'm being ironic with the sequence of like my activity. No, it's just that I like all types of movies and I do have 3 children. Because the swings of like tone and genre on my watch list and on my diary are, you couldn't try it. Like you couldn't attempt it. It just has to happen naturally. So also coming out soon is Pavements, which is the Pavement documentary. I want to go see that in the theater. If anyone is within spitting distance of an indie theater right now, there's a doc I'm dying to see called Mall Apartment. And I haven't seen that yet. So I'm at Mission Impossible. How can you not love those films? I'm very excited. Probably definitely post Memorial Day. I'm just going to probably like sneak into like a 2 o'clock showing. IMAX is in traffic here for me in Nashville. So kind of have to pick my spots there. I don't know if I'll IMAX that one. And then I have, dude, my backlog is just God. It's stressful how many films I want to see that I don't get to. Okay. I was on a plane, a very long flight recently, and I banged out the film. All right, here's my recent four, since we're not going to talk about the film that you asked me about, because how dare you. My wife and I went to go see our third film together in the theater since we've had children. For reference, my oldest child will be 11 in September. One more time, three films together. Three films together. Nope, that was the fourth. Four films together in 11 years that we've seen in the theater. Black Bag was the film. I loved it. I like Soderbergh. I like it when Soderbergh's just like, hey, this is ground rule double. Well, it's a ground rule double. We're going to get in. We're going to get out. Also, 90 fucking minutes, people. How can you not like that? 90 minutes? I was on a flight, and for the first time, I went the opposite direction. I was on a long enough flight to watch a film, and normally, it was like the Delta offerings. And normally, what I do on the Delta offerings is I'm like, what mid-grade shit have I not seen yet that I can just like eat my, you know, my snack food with? What, you know, like if The Accountant 2 was on Delta, I'd be like, all right, perfect, let's go. Nope, I watched Reds, a 3-hour opus from one Warren Beatty. I think that movie came out in 81, when I was born. Then I watched a documentary about the sneaky rat fuckery about the creation of Batman on Hulu. And I watched it in five sittings washing dishes at my house. So I clipped it into 15-minute increments on Hulu. It's called Batman and Bill. It's basically about the guy that invented Batman is not the person you think. That guy, Bob Kane, was kind of a shithead and a shyster. And the guy who invented him passed away alone, essentially died in a fucking like unmarked grave or something. It was insane. And then I was on another trip. I found there's a documentary called Saturday Night that James Franco made where Lorne Michaels gave him total access to a writing week at Saturday Night Live in 2010. And I found it on YouTube. Like someone just pirated and put it up. It was really, really interesting if you are interested in creative writing. It's less about the SNL mystique and all that kind of celebrity stuff as it is. It's just really a documentary about it's like three or four sort of plot threads about sketches and how they'll go. The host that week that they shot the documentary was John Malkovich. And just watching it's anything about the creative process I'm in on. Like I don't really watch South Park anymore, but 6 Days to Air is a documentary that anyone who works in creative anything should watch. And then I often find myself on a lot of SNL. It's weird. I don't even watch SNL that much anymore. But if you give me something about it and about the process, I'm 100% there. So that's a filibuster long enough to say that we're not going to talk about the no hitter. July 11th. I'm 30, living and working in a college town with a good job, but feeling like I'm in the wrong place, physically, mentally, and emotionally. I have a solid amount of financial stability and tend to make decisions that are overly rational, bordering on waiting until every single piece is in place to do it. Should I give serious consideration to moving to a city I would be happier in that has better job opportunities, or ultimately wait until I have a job lined up? Whew. Okay, so let's pick apart the part of the sentence that tells me the most, and that is going to be bordering on waiting until every single piece is in place to do it. Oftentimes when I get these questions, the person asking has put their answer in the question, and I think that's, or if not your answer, then maybe the first place we should start, okay? Because you self-identified there. I couldn't imagine living. When you say college town, like, I assume you don't mean Columbus, Ohio, or Los Angeles, California. You know, if you talk about traditional college town, so actually Madison's too big for me to throw out there. I think there has to be like a number or lower where you don't have enough of, I mean, you're 30. So I think a college town is anywhere where if you're 30 and you don't feel like you have enough of a peer group socially that's not connected to either like grad student or professor, then I think that's where you start to feel that weirdness. I had a brief moment with this when I spent six months in Hattiesburg at the University of Southern Mississippi because I was moved there as a writer for the Hattiesburg American by Gannett. And it was right after Katrina. So I was writing about cleanup. I wasn't working in sports. I was writing about like cleanup and local government and stuff. And I remember going out. I don't know how old I was. I was well past undergraduate age. But I just remember that feeling of like, yeah, this is weird. It doesn't have the rhythm I'm looking for. And it just feels like everything's tethered to this one sort of like cultural nucleus that I don't have interest in, or that it just doesn't apply to me. If you have the knowledge enough or the feeling enough, you want the knowledge, you have the feeling. If you have the feeling enough to write this out to me that you feel like you're in the wrong place physically, mentally, and emotionally, then you're ready to go. If you have a solid amount of financial stability, then you're ready to go. But you're telling me I tend to make decisions that are overly rational, bordering on waiting until every single piece is in place to do it. So now you've told me your problem. Not having the job lined up, I get that. But I did not mean for this to happen. This is a little bit of kismet. The reason why I ended up working in professional wrestling for a spell was I was really, really restless working for Gannett, moving around to these crap papers, knew I wouldn't get to where I wanted to go. And then also knew that if I had the job at Gannett in college football, which is all I wanted at that moment in my life, they weren't going to let me do it the way I wanted to. God, that's just crazy. So apparent, big neon sign to me now, but this is 20 years ago. So I picked Nashville. I would like to point out right now, this was before the bachelorette parties. This was before the bachelor parties. This was before the Kid Rock bars. This was before all of that shit. This is the year of our Lord, 2006. I want that on the record. So next year, I've been here for 20 years. I've been told by several people who are born and bred here that these 20 years, are licensed to have ownership as a local and complain like a local. There was that fucking It City story that was in like GQ or Rolling Stone or Esquire or something in 2009 or 10, and or maybe it was even 11. And then the teens in Nashville was just unchecked expansion of every kind of cultural population. Shitbag hipsters, bros, woo girls, like, but this was before all that. I got to Nashville and it was like, there were 11 bars that you would go to. If you were between the ages of 25 and 40, you went to like one of 11 bars in the whole city, none of which were on Broadway. There were a scant few traditional tonks on Broadway. That was it. It was still like you could leave Broadway in three block direction going into what is now referred to as various stupid acronym names. I'm not going to do all that, but like, I'll put it this way, like where the arena is, where the SEC basketball tournament is, if you went four blocks in the direction, I guess that would be south, excellent place to buy crack. Now you couldn't buy you wouldn't be able to afford a condo there without at least two commas. So, c'est la vie. I'm sure you can still buy crack here. But I moved without a job. And I knew that the Tennessean, I knew that there was not a position or wouldn't be a position open for a while with Gannett at the Tennessean. But I just did it. And then got hooked up with the weird job that ended up teaching me way more about the world than the reporting job did. Certainly learned a lot of problem-solving skills. got to see the world. Got to see a lot of Western Europe, I'll put it that way. And, well, Western Europe and Canada and, you know, a little bit of Central America, that kind of stuff. I actually turned down a trip to India to go see my future wife. I was many, many years into the wrestling job, and I had to go. We would sign deals with television providers. It was one of our main, probably the most reliable form of income or revenue in hindsight. And we were on in India via like a mobile network at the time. It's a whole long story. And they were like, yeah, you got to take a wrestler. And I had to take Kurt Angle, who I knew really well. I hope he's doing well. To India for a day of press, but the entire thing from like Nashville to Nashville would have been 70 hours or something. So real fast, get out of Globe and figure that out. I kind of regret not doing it, but also like even in my, I would have been like 30, even in my 30-year-old body. Actually, my 30-year-old body was, I treated way worse than this body. That's a lot to go. Like, you were talking about running there, tagging and running back. I mean, Jesus. Also, when you were there, like the first time I got to go to Spain, I always wanted to go to Spain. I went there first class, and I stayed in a 5-star hotel, and I was escorting people to television networks and really fancy dinners and big tourist locales. But like, you're on a media tour. It is bang, 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 bang. I didn't get to absorb any of the country. Same with Ireland the first time I went. Same with, you name it. So I knew I wouldn't really get to like see anything in India that I wanted to. But I did get to see the world. You need to do this. Because you're telling me that this is what you want to do. You just haven't said it out loud yet. I'm not going to read the question for a third time here. But you have broken out in your question that you know you got to go. You know you're not in a good place on any level. Again, physically, mentally, emotionally. And you've identified what gums up the works, which is that you're sort of waiting for total certainty to make a decision. That's never going to occur. What will occur what I can tell you will happen for 100%, or as my 5-year-old says, for real life. What will happen for real life, man, is feeling of displacement, physically, mentally, and emotionally, will persist if you don't make a change. So I hope this works. I hope you move. Let me know where you move. I wouldn't say like dart a city, like dartboard a city. Although you could. Don't come to Nashville. I mean, come to Nashville if you want. I'm not trying to be rude or like I wouldn't like you as a person. That was a joke more about like traffic's really bad. We got Austin'd. We got Austin'd real good and without any of the fucking elite Tex-Mex food. Like a skosh, but not enough. Last one. No need to add this trauma dump to the podcast, and apologies if you're not in the best mindset to receive it. Look, dude, I assume. The trauma dump is the fucking subhead title of this thing. But I wanted to share my appreciation for the return of the Single Wing. Therapy, along with yours and the overall community's questions and perspectives, have been super beneficial to this 41-year-old navigating a life that isn't what they necessarily envisioned. And in parentheses, this person writes, no kids, living away from family and friends. In a year where I lost my parents in the span of a season. Whew. I know I've benefited from this parasocial palship a ton, and I look forward to continuing that with the PI iteration, Phantom Island. Love to you and the community. Not a question. Thank you. Just thanks. Thank you. Losing your parents in the span of a season. I don't need to tell you anything because you are living it right now. But maybe this will tie back to some of the other questions I received. But building in and not wallowing, that's kind of key to this whole thing. But you got to be vulnerable. And isn't it weird that pain and vulnerability are mutually exclusive sometimes? When you feel pain, you don't want to be vulnerable. Isn't that an odd thing in our engineering? I think this person, based off of just the positive comment, I appreciate everything you said. Thank you, by the way. I look, this is an insane thing for me to be doing, and it is absolutely not something I ever thought I'd be doing in my career. And if you know me in real life, I don't think anyone's going to be like, oh, you give strangers advice. And then they just creep away slowly at the fucking cocktail party. I'm only doing this because y'all ask these questions. So I never once said, hey, ask me about how to be a good parent, or because I'm still trying to figure that out. I never said, hey, this, that. Like, I can only tell you what I've gone through, and I can only try and listen. And, you know, I will say a lot of you guys, the tell is there. You guys have a tell in your questions. You guys can just, that's why I copy and paste these things. And so if it sounds funny when I read them out loud or I stumble, it's because I do them exactly the way they're written. And you can kind of derive intent there. You can see what the person wants to say, wants to do. And they put all this accoutrement around their actual intent in the question because they're hedging or they don't feel strong about it. There's an insecurity there. There's no need to do any of that. Thank you very much. Thank you for supporting Phantom Island. Thank you for supporting The Single Wing. We, as in The Single Wing specifically, will be back in June, TBD, along with a bunch of other cool, really fun stuff. It's going to be a variety of programming. We're going to have bigger announcements along the way. As we move forward on Single Wing, a little bit of a programming note. As coach gossip stuff or college football gossip stuff really starts to ramp after the 4th of July, it'll go here. So if you end up with a question about, hey, what do you think about this search, or is this person going to get fired, or what do you think about it? Like, the Single Wing's going to house that. But you can still ask questions about whatever you want, and I'll try and answer them. If it's sort of personal growth or emotional development or any of that kind of stuff, we can talk through it together. Go see a professional. Last question asker, just want to point this out, that question, or not a question actually, but that last person to leave that message said they're going to therapy. Give it a shot, white men. Couldn't hurt.